Hey fans, Ingo Weigel,
Matt Griffith,
MMA Nuts,
something or other.
Yes, and we have a very special guest on this edition of...
Renato Laranja?
No.
Damn.
Maybe we should get him soon.
Maybe.
Has he been on the Rogan podcast?
I don't think so.
No, because I think him and Eddie and everybody know that, so he probably wouldn't do our show.
It's like a dick.
But anyways, we had Damian Maya on the show, and Woo! We did a little sit down with him in Comprito. He was in Chicago just this past week, and we had a really good conversation about a lot of topics, including Anderson Silva. What else did we talk about?
Oh, Usamar Palhares.
Yes. What he sees happening in his career moving forward. He's got some staff going on, and so right now he's healing.
That's right.
Looks a lot better than in the picture he posted a few weeks ago. From my impression from when we met him a while back to now, I mean, he looks much leaner. Like, just walking around, you know, it's kind of almost shocking because he was so big. Last time we saw him, I think you even said, like, well, this is a...
It was the first person that we had met in person where his image that you see on TV actually matched what we saw in person.
Yeah, and I don't know if you picked this up, too, but when he was talking about Anderson Silva, I think you had asked him about the fight with Anderson Silva. I feel like there's some unfinished business there.
There is.
In his head, like he feels like he was there at the right place at the wrong time, you know? And now if he would have been fighting him, it'd be a different story, even if it was the same Anderson as before.
Yeah.
So.
And I think there was some other stuff, but you know what? Damian's such a class act that, you know, he won't dive into all the stuff.
Yeah, he avoided some things, and we didn't cover a few questions that we wanted to ask, which... could potentially jeopardize him. As you guys know, what's happening out there, if anyone talks badly about the UFC at this point, it's pretty much see you later. So without further ado, got anything else?
No.
Damian Maya. We're here with UFC, I keep wanting to say middleweight, but welterweight, Damian Maya.
Eight and fights already.
Yes, we were just talking about that, and I feel like, you know, you've been just a middleweight forever, and then you went to welterweight just yesterday, but it's been a long time, I know. And you guys are great friends with Comprito and you, and which is, he helped us set up this meeting here. So thank you for taking some time out to talk to us.
Thank you.
The big question on everybody's mind, I'm sure, is how are you? I know you have some issues with your leg, and are things better?
Yeah, no, I'm better. I'm getting better now. I'm healing. Just, you know, just day before the fight, you know, I had a little... you know, infection in like the hair in my leg, and it became after the fighting a little staph infection, and you know, but you know, I'm treating, I'm getting better, and I'm sure I will be back soon.
Great. Okay, it's good. So maybe we can take a picture after. Tell everybody how you're doing. So,
sure.
And the big question is, we have a ton of viewer questions, but the big question that the theme seems to be, we want to ask you a little bit about Anderson Silva. So obviously he just had his hearing, and there's been some back and forth by his camp, and he said various things about why, you know, he failed his drug test. Do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, do you think it would have been better if he just came out and said, "Hey guys, I broke my leg. You know, I took steroids. Yeah. I had, you know, there's a lot of pressure to fight. Let's take my punishment," rather than, you know, he said a lot of different things.
Viagra and a blue vial and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Is that common in Brazil to have like a blue vial you drink? You know?
I never heard.
Never heard of that.
You know, it's his, what he said. I cannot judge. You know, I can just, you know, he got his suspension. You know, and that's it. Everything was under the, I think, you know, the most important. He went there. They had the judgment, and he got his suspension. You know, that's how the sport should be.
Okay, cool.
And how was that fight? You fought him. That was quite a few years ago for the title.
A little bit more than 5 years.
Abu Dhabi, right?
Yeah, in Abu Dhabi.
And how was that interaction with him? Because it seemed almost at times where, I don't know if he was taunting you or what, but there were some weird exchanges, almost like he didn't want to engage at times during a fight.
Yeah, I think, you know, he was going to try to keep the fight stand up, of course, you know, and I was going to, you know, try to clinch. But he's very good on controlling distance. He was able to you know, to keep the distance all the fight. And the good thing is, after that fight, I realized many things. I realized that, you know, I could fight anyone because he was the best in the world in that time. And I, you know, I fought him for five rounds. And I realized that, you know, I need to train more, takedowns more, you know, stand-up jiu-jitsu, wrestling, everything. So, you know, I start to do much more. I start to come here to U.S., do a lot of wrestling camps, and even in Brazil, you know, improve my stand-up jiu-jitsu. You know what? It, you know, is working now, you know. Takes out, when you decide something, it's not just, okay, I'm going to train wrestling or something, and next fight I will be better. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes a while, and I've been doing that consistently for like 5 years, and now I feel that I'm one of the best wrestlers in the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think your last couple of fights has been pretty amazing. I know I talked to Comprito a lot about this, and you're pretty happy that Damian decided to go back to his roots, it seems like, you know.
Yeah, he's a jiu-jitsu fighter. He should be fighting jiu-jitsu. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's how he wins.
Yeah, it seems. And you know, like I was saying before we started taping, I think a lot of people don't really understand how difficult it is to keep somebody down on the ground when they want to get up. And you make it look so easy. I mean, Magny's a tough guy. You had LeFlair before that. And you made that's a young guy. Uh-huh. How do you manage to control, you know, the top game so effectively, basically?
Yeah, I think, you know, I adapt well my jiu-jitsu for that game. Like, one day I was talking to Comprido after my, not this fight, but La Flash fight, and he said, when you pass the guard, it's easy, you know, looks so easy. I know it's not easy. I'm trying to do with the guys how the way you pass. I said, yeah, but, you know, if I go to pass just in sport jiu-jitsu, I will have the same problems. But I think I adapt well how to punch and pass at the same time. So using the striking and passing. And that's, I think, is the difference on my game. You know, I did a good, how I say, you know,
transition.
Yeah, you know, with the sport jiu-jitsu for the more like self-defense jiu-jitsu and MMA jiu-jitsu. So I think that, you know, I realized some small tricks and details that, when I stop my career, I can teach.
Okay, but you don't want to teach them now. You make it look so very easy. I mean, it's amazing, you know, how just simple you're, and you're very smooth in your transitions. And
I remember back then in, like, the 90s watching Hickson, and, you know, I watched his fights, and I said, he just, you know, stand up, open the guy's guard, you know, and pass the guard so easy, mount, go to the arm. How, you know, it's so hard to do that, how he does so easy. But that, and one day he said, you know, it's the invisible jiu-jitsu, the small details that you do.
Yeah.
And invisible. That's the invisible jiu-jitsu, you know, how, like it's not the different positions, but like it's small positionings and angles that you use your hips and arms that makes difference. So, and it's hard to realize if you, even if you're a jiu-jitsu expert, you don't realize if you don't speak to the guy and ask him how you do this and that, you know, and start to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, how did you guys actually meet? Maybe you can speak to that. I know you talk about Damian a lot, but what's your history?
We used to training together. Damian is from São Paulo. I'm from Rio de Janeiro. We are 5 hours away by car. Damian was training on the Alliance Academy in São Paulo. Okay. And I was going there to training all the time. I think when I met Damian, I was already black belt, right?
Maybe brown, just before brown you get black. Yeah, just before I met Rodrigo, I remember just before you fight a Pan American here as a brown belt that I think you won the weight division, lost the absolute. Yeah, 98.
Since 98, Damian and was a blue belt, always eager to learn and to train, so we become good friends. And man, the years passed, we training so much together. I used to beat him so bad from that time.
You're a little bit.
It doesn't happen anymore, you know.
Not anymore?
Things change somehow. Yeah. And for me, it was great to see, like, a person, a friend, realize his dreams, you know. Damian always want to be an MMA fighter, you know, always invest on this dream. And, you know, in the beginning, we really don't think will happen. You know, I'm one of the, I don't know. Just keep training jiu-jitsu. You're good in jiu-jitsu.
You proved them wrong, huh?
Yeah. But he pursue what he wanna, his wishes, and he's been doing well. He's how many years you are in UFC? You know,
eight years in
UFC.
In October now, in like a couple of months, will be 8 years then.
8 years
for my first fight. Yeah, 21 fights already.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That is a lot of fights.
Just in the UFC, I had six before.
Okay. So how do you think you've managed to adapt your jiu-jitsu so well to MMA? Versus, I think you used to train in mostly in the gi, right?
Yeah. No, we train a lot of no-gi in Brazil also. Gi and no-gi. But I think the thing is like, you know, I love MMA. I love Vale Tudo, the time of Vale Tudo. And always everything that I did and training, I was training think about one day I'm going to fight MMA. So, you know, I said that many times. All my sweeps, I was doing not just thinking sport jiu-jitsu, but I was using something that could be useful for MMA or no-gi. And then my takedowns, you know, I don't do too much like takedowns with the lap. All my takedowns is basically double and single since the time of jiu-jitsu. Because, you know, my will was to fight MMA. So, you know, I said, okay, I will stick with the things that I think that, you know, my guard was a guard, and you know, sometimes even training on gear was thinking if the guy was punching for here. Mm-hmm. So that was in the back of my mind all the time. I think that's helping me, you know. A lot of the development that you have in jiu-jitsu happens inside your mind, I think. Not just training, but you know, where you is something that inside your mind you think, you know, you're training and you think, and my mind setup was all about MMA, so even train on gi or no gi without punches. So I think that's, you know, increase my game.
Okay. I know we've talked about this as well, like guys coming up in mixed martial arts, I think your opinion is mostly they should start with one thing and then grow from there, become an expert, and you know, is that kind of still how you feel?
Yeah, I think it's much easier if you have a strong base in one martial arts and then you build around that.
Okay.
You know, not trying to do everything on the same time, you know, learn how to boxing, how to wrestling, how to do jiu-jitsu on same time. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to be so good in so many different aspects. You know, when you're really good in jiu-jitsu, then you can build your boxing, you can build your wrestling around, you know, and your Muay Thai and stuff like that. And that's how it works for Damien, and then how it works for a lot of people.
Mm.
You know, he's not a jiu-jitsu fighter anymore. He's a MMA fighter who uses techniques, all kinds of techniques, but his strength is jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, he proves he can box. He beat Anderson Silva standing on he wins some rounds standing.
When Anderson decided to engage, I think you won those exchanges, I would say, for sure.
First round of the Mark Munoz fight.
Yeah, that was awesome. A good one, too. Yeah. And you kind of went back to your jiu-jitsu roots. So,
yeah.
I mean, how do you... Okay, so speaking more on that, I know you'd fought Rory McDonald recently, and I think he's a guy who's more MMA.
Yeah,
he never trained, like, one discipline. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like he's better off for it, or do you think he would be better necessarily?
I think there's no rule, actually. I don't think there's, like... I think both ways can be good, you know? Depends. But I think if you very... Let's say, you know, I guess... I don't know, because, you know, the sport is developing and so much that it will be changed. But I believe if you're very talented, you know, athletically...
Mm-hmm.
If you're a very good athlete and you do everything at the same time and you start young, I think it will work.
It'll work.
You're going to be a very good MMA fighter. But at the same time, if you start one sport and you create an identity, you know, like I did for jiu-jitsu, and then you start to spread to another martial arts, it will work also. I think, you know, both ways, there is no, like... Now everybody should do, like, since you kid, do everything. Or I think everybody should do just jiu-jitsu or boxing and then start to spread. I think, you know, depends the person, how he or she reacts for the learning and what you like, you know, to do. It depends. There is no rule.
Okay.
When you were growing up and learning jiu-jitsu, was there a fighter that you looked up to as far as, like, that got you into MMA?
Yeah, many. You know, especially MMA, I think, you know, almost everybody from my generation was Royce Gracie, you know, because he started everything in the UFC. And Rickson, of course, in Japan. But, you know, I start to look a lot of, you know, jiu-jitsu champions also, like, you know, Rodrigo, like, you know, Leozinho, yes. Like Tereré. They were all my teachers, Fabio Gurgel, you know, the guys from Carson Gracie Academy, Murilo, Zé Mário. The guys from Barra Grace, like Roleta, Pé de Pano, many, you know, all those guys were like idols for me, and you know, I learn a lot from watching their fights.
So, besides yourself and Comprito, which I know you guys are at the top, of course, who would you say is the best Brazilian fighter of all time? In your opinion.
In my opinion. MMA style, or are you talking
about jiu-jitsu? Sport jiu-jitsu?
No, I'm more so someone who represents MMA.
MMA or
you know what, maybe I should, I don't want to lock it down. Just from Brazil, the best fighter all around, be just jiu-jitsu, be just MMA, or be whatever.
Yeah, just jiu-jitsu, I think the best guy who I ever saw fighting was Roger.
Okay.
You know, Roger Gracie.
Cabrito knows him well.
Yeah, yeah, I think, you know, Buchecha is going the same way, but I think still, you know, I think Roger was. Xande also, you know.
Okay.
But I think more Roger because the way he did the things. No Gi, for sure, I think Marcelo Garcia.
Okay. But there's a really cool video of you guys rolling together.
Yeah, yeah. But he's taking it easy with me. Yeah, he was taking it easy. He's too much nowadays, you know. Because he keep, you know, like I said, I change. We used to train in São Paulo together. And we are like pretty much the toughest training for each other in that kind of, but I went to one direction, like the MMA, and he went to another one, and he went to the direction to you know, jiu-jitsu. That, you know, it's impossible, I think, for me to be here nowadays. He's so good on that, you know. So for me, he's very impressive, especially because he's not big. You know, he's strong, but he's short. He's not like a, you know, 200-pound guys. And for me, you know, because of that, he's maybe the best of all time in jiu-jitsu. And if you think Gi and no Gi, if you think just Gi, I think, you know, Roger.
Roger.
And MMA is hard. We have many, you know.
Sure.
We have many.
You do. Okay.
And then speaking of jiu-jitsu and MMA, what are your guys' thoughts on Husamar Palhares? He seems to be continually holding the submissions too long, and then...
Yeah, it's hard. It's, for me, it's hard to talk because he's a nice guy. He's a cool guy, and for me, he was always nice. But, you know, of course, you know, there's something that needs to be done because, you know, many guys that I know, you know, they get really bad injuries after fighting. And you know, when you go to fight and when you tap, you know, you tap because you don't want to get injured, so you cannot do that, you cannot hold. So the thing that I say, you know, you cannot hold. I don't know why he's doing, you know, I don't know if he doesn't realize or, you know, like I said, stuff, because, you know, I didn't speak to him. I don't know what's happening, but of course it's, you cannot hold a submission when the guy taps. I don't know what Rodrigo thinks at all.
I think he's wasting his talent being dumb.
Yeah.
You know, like doing that, he's a fighter. He should know when the guy taps, when the judge shaking him. He should let him go. I don't know why he does that. But he should to change. He will lose everything he achieved. The kid with so much talent, what could achieve so much good stuff. He's putting his career on the trash, you know, and then I don't like this, you know, like even if you are competing against someone, if you're fighting MMA against someone, the moment they hit tap, the moment the guy give up is the moment you have to start to celebrate. Not the time you have keep trying to impose your will against the person.
Yeah, it's the same thing if the guy is very good in knockouts and he knock out the guy and keep hitting the guy instead.
We see that a lot.
The referee try to separate and the guy keep hitting the guy. So, you know, of course, he needs to find something to change that, yeah. You know.
What if we bring in a stun gun?
A stun gun. Get!
The problem is you pass to the other guy. Yeah. Too, you know?
Is that difficult to do though? Like when you're so excited and you're fighting, and maybe both of you guys can speak to that as well. You know, if you're in the moment, how come some guys can go, okay, it's over? Even with you brought up the knockouts. I mean, a lot of guys will knock guys out and they'll walk away before the ref even stops the fight. And other guys, uh-huh. Dan Henderson, for instance, you know, you remember the Michael Bisping fight.
Yeah, and my favorite.
One of my favorite knockouts. But, you know, yeah. It's kind of, I mean, how come some guys can do it and other guys can't? It's, you know, from both perspectives.
I think, you know, it comes from experience, of okay. course. But, it's when you feel the referee touching you, you realize it's so, over. Yeah,
okay.
You realize it's over.
Kind of snaps so. You out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Sense. Sometimes you can. Even I remember when I fought my second fight in the UFC against Ed Herman, and when I had a triangle and you know I kind of sweep him, he went down, and I realized he passed out. Mm-hmm. Before the referee touched me, I was releasing.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I start to stand up, I put my hands on the ground, the referee realized and pulled me up. But because I realized that, you know, sometimes you don't realize, but, you know, when the referee touches you, you realize right away that yeah. it's over, yeah.
Yeah, do you see that a lot in jiu-jitsu tournaments? I mean, I know a guy on our team got an arm dislocated or something over the weekend, but...
Yeah, but it was different. It was a takedown, he posed. Yeah.
Oh, he
and
did.
Then he got hurt.
Oh, normally in jiu-jitsu championships, yeah. it doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
No. The guy, everybody releases fast.
Yeah. You know what you feel when the guy tap, you right. know. And then when you're training, you have to trust the person you're training. Even the person you're fighting, you have to trust.
Yeah.
The moment you quit, the other person going to let you go. Mm-hmm. You know, other ways is no point in yeah. do it. You know, it has to be some trust on your opponent. You know, on your training partner, or on your opponent, or on the referees. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think everybody who does stuff like that should to be suspended or go for some kind of judgment or trial, because that looks bad for the sport. I had a friend who been hurt by Tokin, what seems a nice person to me, but he keep doing that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to defending him when he keep doing that. You know, I'm friends of his manager. His manager is a good person too. It's hard to keep defending him.
Yeah.
He does stuff like that on the gym as well. He so I don't know what's the problem. Maybe his skin is too thick, and then when you tap, you know, like he like cannot feel.
What is that?
No, maybe a scientific explanation. But yeah. And then when you punch, it's the same. Like you mentioned Dan Henderson, that extra punch was yeah. not an accident. Well, we all
yeah,
know that.
Said as purpose. Much. Yeah.
It's not an accident. Right. You know, and he should be punished. And I love watching Dan Henderson fight. Right. And. Mm-hmm.
He's no, but the thing with Dan Henderson was before the referee, you know, because the rule says when the referee separates, you need to respect, because you don't need to release the submission before or the knockout before the referee, you know, interfere.
I see.
So the thing with Dan Henderson, when Bisping fall, he went to the punch, but as soon the referee went, you know,
he stopped.
The problem is if the referee go between and he just push the referee, then is the wrong thing, okay. You know. Because sometimes you don't know, you know. Sometimes he knock out the guy, but he when the guy is falling, he think the guy can, you know, recover. So he wants to give the extra punch. But if the referee jumps you, as soon as the referee touches you, jumps, you know, you need to stop.
Okay. I have one last question. I don't know if you have anything else.
Go ahead.
No. Before we let you go, just curious. I know you're entering, you know, probably near the end of your career at some point. You're closer to the end of the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Like, thinking about all that, what are you looking to do in the next 2 or 3 years with your MMA career? I mean, what do you see happening for yourself?
You know, I'm the thing that I did my last year or year and a half ago was try to take a little bit, you know, every time I fight there is too much pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, I put too much pressure on myself. So I try to release a little bit and realize that, you know, like everybody says, it's easy to say go there and, you know, do your best. But, you know, I always go there when I win so bad that I put too much pressure. I'm trying to release at least a little bit. I'm not like 100%, you know, like pushing the pressure. Mm-hmm. Try to release a little bit. I think, you know, it's helping me to do better. Mm-hmm. And that's come from experience. And, you know, I hope I can keep winning like that. And you ask about what is your, you know, your goal. My goal is to fight for the title again, you know, and do my best to win the title. And that's what I'm going to try to do, mm-hmm. try to reach. But, you know, who knows what is going to happen. Yeah. I just, you know, I will do my best.
What do you think the road looks like for you to get to the title? I assume you have one more fight at least before you get
a
shot.
Yeah, you know, I think if I fight now a guy like, you know, with, you know, I'm number six, a guy with like a top rank too, you know, would be good for that, you know, because then I think if I, you know, fight a guy and win against a guy like top five or something like that.
Sure.
Then you know I can go for the title maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I assume you feel a lot stronger now at this weight class versus, you know, the
yeah, memory. Much better. Okay. Much better, yeah.
Okay. Good. Anything else from you?
Nope. No.
So you can find Damien. Do you have Twitter, Facebook?
Yes.
How can the fans reach you?
Yeah, the fans can go to Damien Maia, you know, twitter.com and it's Damien Maia, my Twitter.
Okay.
And the Instagram is Damien and _ Maia.
Okay.
Because Damien Maia
would already taken.
Yeah.
So you call that guy and be like, hey.
Yeah, so it's Damien _ Maia, the Instagram. And there's the Facebook, which is the fan page, you know, Damien Maia.
Yeah.
So you can get my information from there. And the website also, DamienMaia.com.
Okay. Do you want to give a shout out to anybody, sponsors or anything? Anybody want to say?
Yeah, thank you very much, you know, for my sponsor, Bad Boy, who has been with me for so many years and, you know, passing all, you know, these good and bad moments and, you know, still supporting me, you know. Thanks everybody from there.
Excellent. And Caprito is Chicago, Bloomingdale, right? You have your jiu-jitsu school. And how can fans or people who want to come train reach out to you?
You can look for me at CaprioBJJ.com. I guess if you put CaprioBJJ in all this social media stuff, you will find
me. You'll
be there? I'm not very, very good responding.
Once a month?
So don't think it's personal if you message me and I don't get the response. You know, but I'm here in Bloomingdale every day teaching classes. Stop by if you guys want.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you guys for both
thank
of you,
you
for your
much.
All your time. And wish you the best of luck.
Yep. Thank
and
you.
And I hope you feel better soon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Caprito. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.